Good evening. Welcome to this meeting of the City of Sydney Local Planning Panel. On behalf of the Local Planning Panel, I would like to acknowledge the original custodians of the land we are on, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to their elders both past and present. The Local Planning Panel also acknowledges the present Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who reside in this area. The meeting today is to consider the development applications listed on the agenda. The panel members for this matter are myself, Stephen Layman, as the independent chair, Steve Kennedy, and Peter Romey as the independent expert members, and the community representative, Amelia Thorpe, on my left. I would note that a quorum is three and that items four and five will be decided by a panel of three this evening, the reasons which I'll explain. I welcome everybody to this meeting. Please be assured that the panel will be making its decisions tonight on the planning merits of each application and following consideration of the views expressed in submissions and by people addressing the panel tonight. Determinations and any relevant decision by the panel shall be by a majority of votes of members present at the meeting and entitled to vote. If the votes are tied, the chair will have the casting vote. As an important transparency measure, the reasons for our decisions will be recorded in the minutes as part of the decision. Where the panel goes against or amends the officer's recommendation, the panel will state the reasons. In terms of the presentations, the Manager of Planning Assessments will provide an overview of each development application as it is considered, key issues raised and the recommendation of council staff. We will then hear from members of the public who have registered to speak, followed by the applicant and or applicant's representatives who may like to address issues raised by members of the public. Please note that there is a 3-minute time limit for each speaker with a warning bell at 2 minutes. I ask that each speaker be heard in silence while they are addressing the panel and that courtesy and respect be observed throughout the meeting. Please ensure that there is no personal criticism directed at any speaker or council staff. Any such criticism would be contrary to the panel's code of conduct and will not be accepted by the panel. The panel may ask questions of the speakers to clarify our understanding of what is being said. If you have registered to speak, your address to the panel will be recorded. All the public meetings of the panel are recorded and the recordings are available on the City's website. Please note that there is to be no recording or filming of this meeting other than this. After hearing from speakers, the panel will consider and make its decision on each application. This may involve adjourning the meeting to confer amongst ourselves before reconvening the meeting to make our decision, or we might make our decision without the need to adjourn. If the panel considers that more information is required before making its decision, the panel may defer its decision for consideration at a later date. Item 1 of the agenda is a disclosures of interest. In accordance with Section 4.9 of the Code of Conduct for Local Planning Panels, all panel members have signed a declaration of interest form in relation to each matter on the agenda. Mr. Kennedy disclosed a less than significant non-pecuniary interest in Item 4, Development Application 44-48 O'Day Avenue, Waterloo, Building B, and Item 5, Development Application 44-48 O'Day Avenue and 11 Gadigal Avenue, Waterloo, Building E, as Kennedy Associates are currently working with Ethos Urban as planning consultants on a project in Strathfield. And Mr. Kennedy has provided in the past urban design advice to Koichi Takada's office. Given the potentially perceived conflict of interest, in the interest of abundant caution, Mr. Kennedy will step aside for deliberations on items 4 and 5. No other members disclosed any pecuniary or non-pecuniary interests in any matter on the agenda for this meeting of the Local Planning Panel. Item 2, the panel notes the minutes of the Local Planning Panel of 10 October 2019 2018, which have been endorsed by the chair of that meeting. I should hand you the disclosures of interest. Item 3 is a development application, Anzac Parade, Dacey Avenue and 104 Moore Park Road, Moore Park. We will start with a presentation from the manager on this matter, and then I have 6 speakers, beginning with John Freeman, to speak after that presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. So this is an application for the continued use of Moore Park for a further 5-year period as a venue for major events. Major events are more than 2,500 people for up to 20 days per calendar year. That excludes the bump in and bump out of those events. Within that 20 days, the events which use sound amplification equipment and have a crowd capacity of greater than 5,000 people can be for no more than 8 days per year. Proposed hours are sunrise to 10:30 p.m. or 11 p.m. during daylight saving. Music events with sound amplification with more than 5,000 people are to end before 8 p.m. if they are held the day before a work day. Non-sound amplification events may commence prior to sunrise, such as the Anzac Day service. The application also seeks consent for filming activities. So the site or Moore Park is zoned RE1 public recreation, and the proposed uses are permissible with consent. The application is recommended for approval for a further 5-year period, subject to conditions. The application was notified in July and August of this year, and 173 submissions were received. Since submission, the application has been amended. The original application was lodged seeking a permanent consent. That has now been amended so that the application is just seeking a consent for a further 5-year period. The application has also been amended to delete the use of Moore Park East for car parking during events and delete the proposal to use Moore Park East for promotional vehicles and fan zones. In terms of the submissions that were made, a number of issues were raised. They related to the potential traffic impacts of the events, the degradation of grass and trees within Moore Park as a result of the events, the use of the park on a permanent basis, increased commercialisation of Moore Park, restriction of public access during events, antisocial behaviour arising during the events, the loss of heritage value of Moore Park, insufficient owner's consent, the amenity impacts of the events on the surrounding area, the fact that the concurrence is required or the approval of the applicant in terms of making the decision or imposing conditions, that relates to the fact this is an application, a Crown application, and that the uses or the use of Moore Park for these events is inappropriate. So this is the site. It's a wider Moore Park area. It's split into various areas, so Moore Park West, Moore Park East, Moore Park South, Moore Park Southeast, the golf course, and the southern part of the golf course. And the consent or the application seeks consent to use those various parts for different purposes. The next set of slides are just slides of the existing Moore Park. There's Moore Park West looking north, Moore Park East looking south, Moore Park East looking north, Moore Park South looking southeast, Moore Park South looking south. So in terms of the areas and the nature of events that consent is sought for, in terms of Moore Park West, the proposed events are sporting, recreational and community events whose total attendance does not exceed 5,000. Moore Park East is where the major events would be held, so that's over 5,000 for 20 days per up to 20 days per calendar year. And that would include exhibitions and music concerts, but music concerts would be restricted to a maximum of 8 days per year. functions as well as community, sporting, charity and corporate events. Moorpark South is for minor events, sport, cultural, recreational, educational and demonstration type events. Moorpark South, sporting, recreational, community, low impact music concerts and a smaller capacity. Moorpark Golf Course would be golf competitions, other golf related events and non-sporting sport related events. And the ES Marksfield site, which is the south of the golf course, sporting competitions, other golf-related events and non-sport-related events. So the primary issues are around the use of Moorpark for events are considered to be potential issues relating to traffic congestion, protection of the vegetation of Moorpark, and potential noise impacts. So in terms of traffic congestion, there are management plans in place under the previous consent, which would be adopted and flow through. In terms of when events are held, the operator needs to liaise with Transport for New South Wales, the RMS Council and the police in relation to how traffic issues are managed, and obviously the site is accessible by public transport. In terms of protection of the vegetation of the park, the Trust requires event organisers to enter into licence agreements regarding protection of the grass and the placement of structures in terms of them being clear of tree protection zones. In terms of noise, the Trust has its own regulations and procedures for noise complaints handling. It's governed by the New South Wales Environmental Protection Authority, and there hasn't been significant complaints to council in terms of events under the previous consent. So the application is recommended for approval for a further 5 years, subject to conditions. Thank you.
Thank you. I have seven speakers on my list, and the first is John Freeman. Speak.
Mr. Layman, panel members, I am a resident, but I'm not a nearby resident. I'm here because of a general concern about impacts on heritage values on all Macquarie parklands, and also because of a concern that council is not complying with the environmental planning and assessment regulation in its notifications of development applications generally in the Macquarie parklands. In the case of this particular application, when notified, the application included the car parking and it was on a permanent basis, and for those reasons it fell outside the site-specific exemption from reference to the Heritage Council. It was in fact integrated development, but it was not notified as such. Now, as a consequence, we've had a 3-week exhibition period instead of 4 weeks, but more importantly, it's no good council saying, oh well, we referred it to the Heritage Council for comment anyway and they didn't comment, because with integrated development, the submissions would go to Heritage Council, and Heritage Council would understand the concerns people had about heritage values. Now, I think with the passage of time, it's no good me asking the panel to re-notify this application. That's really not going to do anybody any good. But what I would like the panel to consider doing is to have a re-notification of the Moorpark East components of this development application, because that's the area where all the concerns of the 173 submissions are. This is where the confusion has arisen during the development application with changing the scope. It's in that particular area where the car parking was taken out and the fan zones were taken out. And in my view, under the Environmental Planning and Assessment Act, those changes, the things should have been re-notified. So just to conclude, I'd like the panel to consider re-notifying the Moorpark East component of this development application so that there can be proper public comment. Thank you.
Before you leave, Mr. Freeman, Just before you leave, there may be some questions. Is there any questions from the panel? There is a question.
Mr. Freeman?
Could you come forward again, please, with this question?
Mr. Freeman?
Why
you have a particular concern in terms of heritage in regard to Moore Park East?
To the physical impact on heritage structures. It doesn't consider the aesthetic impacts of car parking on landscape, or the aesthetic, or the whether the use is compatible. It has takes a very narrow view of the heritage value of a place. It's only considering the impacts on structures. And if you go to the borough charter, heritage values are much broader than just the structure.
Setting. Impact on the setting.
Yeah, Freeman, I'm actually now a little confused. The impacts that you say it will have on the setting, we're talking about a very limited number of uses over a period of a year. It's not a constant. Are you saying it's not taken into consideration that in what is basically recognised as an area of high community use? Can you clarify for me, please?
Yes, well, I mean, there's the case in the Land and Environmental Court called Marshall and Hawkesbury, which deals with the clause in the LEP which relates to temporary uses. And the key thing is that it's not whether the impact is acceptable, it's whether there is an impact or not. If I may try to summarise that case briefly. That's one point. Second point is, if you look at Moore Park East, you know, you've got the impact of the car parking for events in the stadium. Then you've got the impact of the major events in that area. So when you take the two together, I would submit, you know, there is quite a significant impact over a year. And what's happened in the assessment of this development application is that it's ignored the car parking because it said, well, that's not part of the development application, but the car parking is going to continue. So the two together add up to a significant impact, I would submit.
Thank you. I think that's all. No further questions. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Number two on my list, I have Maria Bradley, please, representing Keep Sydney Beautiful.
Much for the opportunity to speak. Yes, I'm representing two community groups, Keep Sydney Beautiful and Saving Sydney's Trees. Between us we have about 12,000 followers. Just to begin with, I'd like to make the point that there is no public mandate to lose public green space. I think the community over time has made that abundantly clear. 163 submissions have come in and there are genuine concerns. We don't believe that those concerns have been addressed. We believe that also, like Mr. Freeman, that there's a cumulative effect. There's the stadium development coming, that this assessment doesn't take into account the impacts that will have. We don't have traffic modelling for this particular development, and I think residents will be impacted. I think the loss of green space is a genuine concern in the community. We believe that this part of Moore Park or Centennial Parklands is being turned into a commercial venue. We have Karsinga, who now own the lease for the EQ. We have many things on our radar, and I think it's important that we take any development, we take those other impacts into account, and I don't think this has been done in this particular case. The other thing I'd also like to mention is about ES Marks. ES Marks is a dedicated amateur athletics facility. I noticed that there were plans there for events on that space, and I think that's so out of, you know, it's not what it was intended for. I think we all are custodians of these parklands, and I think all these decisions that we make, every little cut that we make has an impact, and it would be nice to know that, you know, future generations can enjoy these parklands as we have. Just like to also remind you of a quote that Patrick White made. He was a protector of the parklands, and he said that these parks are our green lungs and that we must protect them from political cement. And I believe that it is our duty here to make correct assessments, to take concerns seriously, and to make decisions in a holistic approach. Thank you.
If you just hold your seats for the minute, is there a question? Are there any questions? No questions. Thank you. Next, I have Ross Nicholas, local resident. Just the button on. Is that it? Okay. My name is Ross Nicholas, and I'm a member of the Centennial Park Residents Association, which is a community group which has members from each of the streets in Centennial Park. The first thing that I just wanted to say, there was a suggestion by one of the panel that there won't be regular use of the Eastmoor Park site. I understand that the development application provides for 20 days a year plus bump in and bump out. I would suggest that that is actually, you know, fairly regular use of the site. If every second weekend, because these events tend to be on the weekends, I think that's, in my terms, fairly regular, but still, I mean, that's beside the point here. We had substantial concerns about the development application itself and the process that was that ensued. We requested that Centennial Park withdraw the application because, as has been discussed, it was for permanent use. And for the permanent use, then that was withdrawn. We thought it was inappropriate. And I think that many of the submissions will show that those who were writing in response to the application were similarly confused. The applicant unfortunately decided, was said that there'd been a mistake, an error made by the consultants who had put in the application, but refused to withdraw and resubmit. We considered that the DA was actually misleading, or the process was, because it firstly said one thing and then it said another. We're particularly concerned, and we have for many years been concerned, with on-grass parking at Moore Park East. We support the conditions of consent. However, as I'm sure everybody here is aware, even though there are no, there's no consent and there's no approval for on-grass parking at the moment, it continues. So it is all rather meaningless, but there is, we certainly support the council in its proposed conditions of consent. It's unclear how there should be, unclear to me, and I'm a layman, how there can be on-grass parking on Moore Park East when in fact there's no consent to it. Thirdly, integrated public transport. There's been public discussion for many years of integrated parking, both with the Sydney Cricket Ground Trust and also with the Centennial Park and Moore Park Trust. This has been proposed, pressed, pushed for many years, but nothing has occurred. Now,
It has been implemented at Homebush and apparently successfully. It shouldn't be the conditions of consent proposed that there should be an investigation. We say there's been enough discussion, there's been investigation, it should actually be implemented. And we're sorry that the council hasn't actually provided that as a condition of consent, that there should be integrated public transport ticketing within the ticket price for any ticketed event.
Wind up now, please. 3 minutes are up. Thank you.
Sorry, it's just one thing that was raised, which was the noise complaint process, and we have been, it was raised by council that there have been very few noise complaints. I've been a resident for 30 years and I've never been aware that council had an interest in that area. We complain to Centennial Park and Moore Park Trust and to the cricket ground and we get very few, very little response. So I'm not surprised that council doesn't get any noise complaints because people generally go to the person who generates the noise. Thank you very much. Any
questions? Yes, if you can just stay there for a minute to see if there are any questions. Any questions? Noise complaints process, do you think is warranted? You say that it's inadequate.
I think it's important that any, you know, that areas that are affected are informed of the events so that people can, you know, with adequate time, they should be letterboxing, emails, I don't know, there should be, and there certainly should be indication, or they should be on the respective websites of whoever is generating it. Centennial Park, Moore Park Trust should have on their website the when the event is being held, the times, and also a hotline number. Very often that's not the case. It's the information is outdated. Quite often any complaint line is unmanned during the event, and so it's been, you know, pretty unsatisfactory. A fairly basic sort of things, you know. Common sense, but you know, they often don't happen, and you know, and also a proper response. There should be a proper response after the event, and that doesn't happen. But certainly in the future, I'll be complaining to the council as well. That'll be. Thank you.
Now. Next I have Linda Scott from the City of Sydney.
Hello, thank you. I'm Linda Scott, the Deputy Lord Mayor of the City of Sydney, and really pleased to be here with you tonight to speak strongly in opposition to this development application. I am really opposed, along with many, many in our community, to these form of generalised Crown development applications for consents that run over a number of years to host non-specific events on public parkland. It is the case that we have very, very rare public open space in the City of Sydney, of which Moore Park forms a fundamental part of the network. And any form of encroachment over it, particularly for private events, a very serious incursion into the important public space that we have at the city. I have had the pleasure of attending one or two public events in Moore Park, for example, on the dawn service for Anzac Day, where you have small gatherings of residents for a public good use, which are strongly supported by the community. But when it comes to generalised consents for events that can run up to hundreds or thousands of people that take out the public parkland for any number of days at a time, that is a serious incursion on the public space, and my view is should be rejected. Having obviously in the previous term had the power on this council as a councillor to consider these DAs myself, I've again spoken against them when they've come before us, and I understand the difficulties that the panel has in assessing Crown DAs. My view is that much stronger conditions of consent should be put on this application in order to more severely constrain the levels of event, both the number of days of access and also the hours that are available in this kind of application. And again, I understand the difficulties presented in these Crown DAs when you have to sometimes negotiate these outcomes, but my view is that there is immense and strong community opposition to the development application as it currently stands, and it does not meet the public good test that's required generally for all development. Thank you.
Thank you. So you're aware that Council's not in a position to refuse the Crown application as a matter of negotiating conditions of consent?
Well, I certainly am aware and have done so in the past that when the applicant comes up to speak, I've used the opportunity to ask the applicant a range of questions and reflect the concerns that I've heard back from the community and that the speakers can in order to seek agreement about a range of further conditions of consent. My strong view, I'm not sure if the applicant is here or not, but my strong view is that if this development application is considered and passed by the panel, there will be a very strong public backlash under the current conditions of consent that have been presented to the panel. And my very firm view is that it would be in the public good for the applicant to reconsider their agreement to a range of the conditions.
Question then, what do you think are the priority conditions that ought to be considered? You've spoken rather generally. Let's talk specifics.
I think the primary concern that I have heard is the number of days. I think the commercialisation of a public parkland for the number of days that are requested is too high, and that should be significantly reduced. I also think the space referred to is far too generalised. For example, the point made by an earlier speaker about the oval I think is a very important one. The city has a number of open space sets of information, but including specifically an open space study on the number of ovals available, and all that evidence points to a severe limitation in the number of playing fields and ovals that we have. Just to give you a personal example, when my husband rang the council in order to book a small playing field for our children's cricket team, he was told that there were no ovals available anywhere in the city of Sydney into the future. So one cannot start up an informal sporting team in anywhere in the city because there are no ovals available. So even any day taken away from a field like the field referred to here is a significant incursion into the sporting requirements. So they would be my two priorities, the number of days and particularly the oval.
Were there any questions from the panel? I don't think there were. Thank you very much. Just to speak, Jeanette Brockman. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to give some context, I used to live directly opposite the park for many years, so I'm intimately familiar with Moore Park, and I now live about 1.8 kilometres away in the suburbs of Chippendale. Chippendale is a suburban city that's very reliant on the park, Moore Park and Centennial Park, because we have the lowest amount of urban space in Sydney and we have some of the poorest residents in Sydney. We have our average incomes less than the average in the state. We also, the majority of residents live in high rise, most of which do not have balconies and many of which do not have any sunlight. So we're very reliant on Moore Park. I also work with a number of other groups locally, so I'm intimately familiar with the general consensus that the park shouldn't be used for major events. But I'd just like to clarify one thing. The park, what's proposed is 20 events a year, in addition 65 days for circuses. In addition will be the events that are permitted under SEP code for exempt and complying development, which enables markets and other events to be held. So when you add up 85 plus the bump in days and bump out and the other events, you will have at least one in 4 days that's allowable every single year that's permitted. You also, since the first time that the initial DA was approved in 2008 to now, you've got substantial changes to the SEP code. Before those items, before you would have to actually seek approval, now you don't. So the applicant has a lot of flexibility to allow even further events. The actual recommendation did not consider the cumulative impact. It did not consider the impact in that the Sydney Football Stadium SSD that's currently being considered by the state government is also increasing major events. While the document states it's not, the actual reports show that it is. So when you consider that you have a cumulative impact of the amount of events on Moore Park, plus the amount of events that are going to be happening at Sydney Football Stadium, plus the amount of events at Centennial Park, you have probably in the order of 30 to 40% of the year taken up with traffic congestion impact on local amenity. Given that I used to live across the road from there and I could actually hear every event, I can tell you clearly that the noise report, and I used to work for acousticians, was totally inept. It did not identify the noise impact. It did not consider the noise impact on Surrey Hills residents and the impact of wind coming across that field. So you have from Sydney Football Stadium and then you have from Moore Park East, you have a direct impact. Noise will travel until it reaches, the acoustics can be perfect across there. The other thing that the recommendation did not consider was that there is an incentive for the trust, and I'm not blaming the trust because it doesn't have the revenue, it needs to rely on its own commercialisation of space, but it doesn't have the revenue. So the actual agreement between the trust and the vendor who is hiring the space is actually incentivised. So that's to optimise, so that immediately means the trust has a conflict of interest, it will seek to optimise what's to its benefit for their revenue. I know that you are limited in what you can do within the, because it is a Crown application, but I would say that you need to go back to the department and ask some hard-hitting questions. If there's a benefit for the applicant and this application wasn't notified properly, I really believe that you need to notify it before. I have raised with the city my concerns about the notification process, and I believe the city felt that because it was changing, lessening things, it was better. But it still hasn't been notified properly. So
you're well past your three minutes. Can you? How long much more do you need to finalise your submission?
Just from a local perspective, this is what's actually happening. In our area, we're 1.8 kilometres away, okay? We're not directly impacted, but we rely on that for our dogs, for our children, for our passive recreational space. You know, the fact that it hasn't been commercialised at the moment, Kippex Lake and West Moore Park East, is such a benefit. So when we go up there, we can't even get there at the moment because it's the traffic, you actually can't drive. You've actually got to walk your dogs up there, you know, unless you go up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And the other thing that's never, ever considered is that Prince Alfred Park is now going to be shared. It's going to be a high school. Fantastic to get a high school, but we can't use it anymore. Well, we have very limited use. We have difficulty using the other park. So, again, it's just what if you're going to put in a 2% growth per year on population here, you've got huge reliance on that space. You can't keep giving it away. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the panel? No questions. We have now Patrick Lebon. Patrick Le Bon for the applicant.
Thank you, panel. And yes, my name is Patrick Le Bon. I work at Milestone Town Planning. We were the applicants for the DA and we prepared the development application on behalf of the trust. Now, I've got a few matters I might go through just in response to some of the matters raised by the people that spoke before me. Firstly, I'd like to say, obviously, we've reviewed the report and we've agreed to the conditions consent on behalf of the trust. So, you know, obviously, we support the recommendations of the report and the conditions that are proposed in, on the consent in the report. One of the matters, I'll just work through the matters that were raised and then, obviously, if there's any further questions, I'm happy to answer them. So the first, one of the first points is regarding the car parking. Obviously, there's a condition that's proposed to be included in the consent regarding not permitting the car parking on the site by attendees to the event, so that's been covered off in our view by that condition. An issue was raised regarding heritage and whether it was integrated development. So, as you may be aware, the site is subject to a site-specific heritage exemption, and this matter was addressed during the course of the development assessment, and it was deemed to be satisfactory in the terms of the fact that it's not an integrated development because the development itself or the use or the proposal is consistent with the provisions of the site-specific exemption. So, in that regard, we've satisfied the requirements and it's not an integrated development, which has been confirmed with the council officers during the assessment of the application. One person mentioned the loss of green space. We'd just like to confirm during the nature of the proposal is that there are temporary structures and the like, that obviously there is some reduction in accessibility to the site, but there are no temporary structures, so no permanent structures or any physical works proposed as part of this development or this DA in terms of physical permanent structures that would reduce the amount of green space permanently. Traffic management was raised as one of the concerns. There are conditions, as you may be aware, in the consent, in the draft conditions consent that refer to ensuring that there's consultation with Transport for New South Wales and appropriate management plans are prepared to ensure that the traffic and car parking is managed in terms of the overall use of the site. So we feel that those matters have been addressed through the conditions of consent. There was a comment regarding ES Marks field, and that's we'd just like to confirm that, the use of ES Marks field is to remain as a primarily a sporting field for sporting events, and that's not proposed to change in that regard. Any events that are held will work around the scheduled events for that park, and that's certainly the intent of the trust is for that to remain first and foremost and primarily a sporting field for sporting events. Noise complaint procedures are covered in conditions of consent, and that's it's been addressed through conditions 11 to 16, and there's various conditions regarding management of noise and management of complaints and how that's handled, and we feel that those conditions appropriately address any of the concerns that have been raised, particularly regarding reporting complaints by members of the public. Another comment regarding the events and the number of events and hours of events. I've just got a couple more points to respond to.
So if you can just stick to succinctly addressing the points that were raised, please. Please proceed. Thank you.
Just two more points to go. So there was a comment regarding restricting or reducing the number of days and the number of hours of the events that are proposed. And also a comment regarding the use of the site for circuses for 65 days a year. First of all, regards to the circuses, that's not part of this proposal, so that was never part of this proposal. It is part of the current DA that applies to the site, but that is not part of this DA, so that circus use is not forming part of this application. And going back to the events and hours in terms of the use, the trust balances the use of this space, and they're quite cognizant of the fact that they are custodians of this land, and they want to ensure that there is use of the site for a range of activities, including for events, as well as free public access. So the number of events that are proposed are based on that fundamental basis of the use of the land, and certainly through the proposal and the course of the assessment, we've put forward the assessment that in our application that use and that intensity of use is certainly an acceptable use that's continuing a similar intensity of use that's currently on the site. So certainly our position is that we feel that the days and hours that are proposed are acceptable. I think that's all the main points that were raised, but I'm happy to respond to any questions.
And from the panel.
Thank you. All of the previous speakers emphasised the issue of cumulative impacts as against specific. So, for instance, the circuses are not part of this application. The argument was between the various sporting venues, the various events, the various events that may be held under exempt and complying and the like, that in fact there was a, one of the quotes was, one in 4 days will be, the parkland will be used for something. Can you talk to that, please?
Well, there's a, yeah, obviously we're aware that there's other applications, development occurring nearby the site, including the stadiums, the stadium being redeveloped. Look, they're obviously a different stream of the Planning Assessment Act that's through a, not under the assessment of council, and those applications for the, specifically to do with the stadium, that would be an assessment that's being done by the Department of Planning and the Minister, obviously, that would, they would consider the cumulative impacts as part of that application for that proposal. In terms of our proposal for what we're proposing, we're aware that there is a cumulative impact, and that was addressed in the Statement of Environmental Effects. We addressed the impacts of parking and traffic and noise and general use of the site. Like I said before, we are actually, there are other avenues where uses of the site may be permitted under the exempt and complying development code SEP. But ultimately the trust remains the gatekeeper of how the site is used, and the trust is very aware of the importance to maintain public access to this site and balance the needs against community expectations as well as obviously the obligations of the trust as an organisation. So I think ultimately they're responsible for the use of this land. The application that's before us tonight, I mean, that's quite clear in terms of what we're proposing and the intensity of the use, and that's been the assessment that council's conducted, and we feel that the assessment done by council is, has considered all the community impacts appropriately. Like I say, the trust is the essentially the gatekeeper of in terms of the use of the land. So, like I say, that is first and foremost their, you know, their responsibility to make sure that there's appropriate use of the land and that the access to the site for public use is maintained.
Can I ask, where do the 20 days come from? What determines that figure and the 8 days?
That's a continuation of the previous consent, firstly. We just considered that is something that is established as part of the previous or current consent of the site. It also is covered in the Act that for the Centennial Park and Moore Park Act in regards to the amount of events that they're permitted to have. So it's also ground.
Days in the Act, is that what you're saying? Yeah.
That is correct, yeah. So that's where the 20 days has come from. It's a continuation. So essentially this is, the position of the trust. This is essentially renewing of the current consent on the site. And it was proposed to maintain as much as possible those major events on the site to continue that number that is proposed under this DA to continue that under this, the previous DA, sorry, continue that, carry that over in this application.
I wasn't aware that there was a provision in the Act that spoke to the number of days. Is that a maximum number of days that on which, you know, these type of events can occur? How many of these events have been occurring over the last 5 years on an annual basis?
So the first question, in reference to the Act, my recollection is that there is a restriction in terms of the maximum number, and it's tied to the number of attendees that can attend for the major events. I don't have the Act in front of me right now, but yeah. The second question in terms of the number of events that occur, certainly over the years we've submitted a schedule of the amount of events that occur that have occurred on the site, and that was part of the submission documentation. So I don't have that in front of me, but it's certainly not, doesn't get to I don't have that number right in front of me right now. Yeah.
Thank you. This question is, I suppose I just need to understand that if this application was approved for 20 days for major events, that that's it. That approval doesn't go on top of other approvals where you get another 10 on top of that and another 20 and so on, but this approval for 20 days limits major events to 20 days. It's not cumulative with any other... Yes, I'm thinking about circus as well.
No, so it's not intended, it's not proposed to be cumulative. It is, that's the maximum cap, 20 major events per year. Circuses, like we said, is not part of this DA. We've removed that from the application. So to answer that specifically, that's not part of the DA. But the answer is no, that's the maximum proposed, and it's not intended to be a cumulative number of events. Yeah.
As well as the number and duration of events, there were also questions about the geographic range. Can you talk about that, and particularly the use of the ES Marks Oval?
So it's specifically to do with ES Marks. Like I said previously, the Trust recognises the importance of that as a sporting facility, and it's not intended that that would change in any way in terms of it being predominantly for that use. So there is a scope for when there aren't events or training proposed, that there would be an opportunity for the days when it's not being used for non-sporting events, because it's set up as a space that is, you know, part of the site where there is the capability of it servicing that need when the need arises. But certainly it's not intended to take away from that current sporting use of that facility. So, and again, like I say, again, it comes down to the Trust making sure that, you know, the events that they are allowing on the site obviously can comply with the conditions of consent, but also don't take away from the intended uses of the various parts of the site, and that the uses and the expectation for uses in the community are maintained. Yeah. And in terms of geographically, can you clarify a bit about, you mentioned ES Marks, but was there other parts of the site that...
Well, I guess you've just got these very broad areas saying the events could be there, and there's no kind of indication about whether you would be using the full extent of those sites that are outlined in the four different areas, or...
Well, by nature of the proposal, we do. The intention is to obviously apply to the entirety of the site, and then within... Yeah, it's not possible to demarcate within certain areas. This is the extent of, you know, as one comprehensive plan, because obviously the nature and the diversity of events and type of activities changes, you know, from, it's quite diverse. So no, in terms of that aspect, no, it is proposed for the extent of the site to be used. And again, it comes down to each event is bound by terms and conditions that are agreed with the Trust to ensure that public access and bump in and bump out periods are scheduled to be as short as possible, and to maintain as much public access as possible around and through the site if need be. So, but in terms of the continuing use of the site as under this application, it would be by and large as per, you know, what's currently the type of events that are used and the space that they occupy. Yeah.
Another question for you, and perhaps for the next speaker. I'm not sure who's the appropriate person to answer, but it seems to me that it's not unreasonable to consider some of the the issues around noise, and you know, whether it's possible to notify the public of these events, the time, the size of event, general size and nature of events, this sort of thing, and if that's not already done, then what more could be done, do you think, that wouldn't be onerous on the Trust, but would help in terms of the public amenity?
So there is a condition, and that's on condition number 14, which does refer to notification of residents, so that is a condition that's proposed, and that is... something that obviously the Trust has agreed to, and they're quite aware that they want to maintain a good relationship with the community and to minimise any impacts regarding noise. So that condition would cover the in terms of notification of residents before or nearby property owners of any major events, prior to major events, they would be... I'm just saying that essentially that condition would require that notice is given by mail or electronic means. So, so I think that condition would cover off, and there's also there's details in regards to the complaints line.
It's an appropriate time to ask a question of the Mr. Yarn, but is this condition the same condition that previously applied to the previous consent, and so would anything change if this condition were now applied?
Through you, Chair, listening to the discussion and the submissions made by objectors, I have got a suggestion of how you might strengthen Condition 14. I can't answer the question of a comparison between the two with the information I have at hand.
Thank you for that. I think it's something that I would suggest the panel might consider is what means could be used to strengthen the condition if we're inclined to support this matter. Any further questions at this stage? No. Last speaker, Jeff Reinhardt, for the Centennial Park and Moore Park Trust. Is he? Hey, Mr. Reinhardt doesn't wish to speak. I understand that Mr. Reinhardt is for the applicant, but does he represent the client that represents the trust? So, could Mr. Reinhardt, do you think, come to the table to see whether there's any possibility of looking at alternate conditions or, you know, it's, What do you think, Mr. Reinhardt? Well, you're registered to speak, so perhaps it would be helpful if you came forward. Thanks, Mr. Lebon. Oh, you can stay there if you wish. Yeah, stay there if you wish. You've heard the dialogue, and there's clearly this.
Perhaps if I could just make a couple of quick comments. Essentially, we're asking for no more here than what has been in two previous consents, and which I think it's fair to say has operated fairly successfully over that period of time. We heard earlier that there have been very few complaints, both registered with the council and indeed with the trust as well, and we feel that certainly during events where complaints have been made to our telephone, that we've addressed that as effectively as we can. The other comments that I'd make was there've been a number of speakers have talked about the car parking issue. And we certainly hear that, we understand that, but make the point that in relation to this application, there is a condition which effectively addresses that issue, and that the broader issue of parking in relation to stadium events is outside the scope of this application. But I would add that we recently went through a strategic planning exercise last year and have now a new master plan for Moore Park, and that master plan certainly recognises the issue of on-grass parking and includes a strategy to progressively remove that over the next 10, 15, 20 years. that can't happen immediately. It will obviously need to be contingent upon the delivery of other transport infrastructure, for example, the light rail. So once light rail is in place, we can start to look at progressively removing the on-grass parking from Moorpark East for major events. And in fact, the master plan recommends that the areas where car parking is currently used will become, in the case of the northern parking area, that will become effectively a village green, a playing field for local community, and the parking area at the southern end of Moorpark East, adjoining Lang Road, will become a sporting field. And I think there was one other point that Patrick also talked to, which is about ES Marks. And the master plan certainly reinforces its role primarily as an athletics and sports field. And to underline that, we've actually just invested $1 million in a new track there. So I think that sort of sets out fairly clearly where our priorities are there. So happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I do think, though, that there's probably scope for some strengthening up of noise and general complaint mechanisms that wouldn't be onerous on the trust. It might give a bit of reassurance to people that we've heard here speak tonight. I'd like to explore that possibility in a way that's not unreasonable, you know, for the trust.
Well, if I can just say, we could consider some revised wording. I suppose that the methodology in terms of how we get to that point, though, I'm unsure whether we do it here or whether we can liaise with council officers.
Can I ask Mr. Yarn to comment on how he thinks we might best proceed in regard to where we find ourselves at the moment?
So the first thing to preface any discussion about varying the conditions is whether the Crown, effectively the applicant, is represented here tonight. That could or could not agree to any variation to the conditions. Otherwise, if there is contemplation of varying conditions, the matter will need to be deferred. So,
and then the question is, Mr. Reinhardt, do you have authority to agree to a variation of conditions this evening, or do we need to defer this matter?
Can I answer that question with a question? If deferral was to occur in terms of the time frame, when would be determination?
Well, just my opinion, but it would seem to me that it is a matter that could possibly be delegated by the panel to staff, subject to meeting certain criteria, you know, it wouldn't necessarily, what I'm thinking is I don't think it would necessarily have to return to a panel meeting. And in that way, it wouldn't unduly extend the time frame.
I think that being the case, we would be hoping for a relatively quick decision because there are event contracts that, you know, need to be processed. But I would need to confer with some of my colleagues before I can give a definitive response to that. But if the process is not going to take too long, I think we'd be happy to do that.
Seems to me to be the way forward.
Well, Chair, I'm not exactly clear on what that response was, but anyway, what I'd be suggesting for discussion amongst the members is a strengthening of Condition 14 from based on the submissions we've heard tonight, and that is that Condition 16 requires notification to Council 14 days in advance of any significant event, together with the contact details of the event organiser, general liaison, and so on. I think we could use the information being provided to Council to strengthen Condition 14 in the notification of residents. And I believe that it would be possible to require that electronic communications, that is their website portal, provides the same information that's provided to Council 14 days before. That is, they provide information on all the major events, what it's expected and so on, the times and so on, 14 days prior to the commencement date of any proposed event. And so that's on the website. And another suggestion would be that the first part of Condition 14, which defines who they might notify, the Centennial Park Moore Park Trust must make all reasonable efforts to ensure that residents likely to be significantly affected by noise, and then it goes on to notification. We could strengthen that by including or who register their email address through the web portal covering the events to this approval prior to it coming into effect. So prior to this approval coming into effect, the condition could be strengthened to have a registration mechanism on their website where a resident can register their name and address and they automatically are sent a notification by email of a major event coming up. And in addition, the information provided to Council under Condition 16 is also provided on the website under Condition 14. And that would just strengthen that condition and wouldn't entail much additional work, but it gives a specificness to the purpose of Condition 14. Closes some of the gaps on discretion there.
Any other matters that the panel want to ventilate?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just suggested under clause under condition 15C, there are four points there, which is how that the council will have the right that the trust must maintain a register of complaints, and that be made available to council. There's four points there, but that's just information about the complaint. I think there should be an additional point, which is that the trust should be able to record and demonstrate to the council how they've responded to the complaint. Otherwise, it's just information gathering. So that imposes an obligation on the trust of sorts, at least to do something in response and demonstrate what they've done.
May it be not unreasonable, Mr. Reinhardt?
Yes, we would have no objection to that. We have a complaints register now, so it should be a relatively straightforward process to do that.
Mr.
Yeah. Of all the other matters that were raised by submitters and were answered by Mr. LeBon, the one seemed that was about the use of the ES Marks field. And I guess the permitted events component that seems to be causing concerns is the non-sport related events, because that's very open-ended. And yet the discussion that was provided by Mr. Le Bon was that the intention of ES Marks was for sporting competitions and sporting related events. So my third suggestion would be to strike, with their permission, the non-sport related events from that table for ES Marks field.
Yeah, I do think it's a very broad term, isn't it? Non-sport events. What is that? And would that be onerous if that was to be struck out?
Yeah, in relation to non-sporting events, that is proposed to provide some flexibility, so that the diversity of events that would be contemplated is not restrained. Like I said previously, the intention is that it would remain, and Jeff has mentioned that there's been investment in the running track surface, so certainly it's not going anywhere in terms of it maintaining that purpose. So I don't think we can agree in principle to striking that out. We could not agree in principle to striking that component out. Like I say, it's, that's something that...
If we were to defer this matter, it might give you an opportunity to reconsider that position, refining that position in a way that gave some sort of reassurance to the public but didn't fetter you unreasonably in terms of the other than sport events that you might want to undertake on the ES Marks field. I heard what you say about the investment in the track and the principal purpose, and but I just wonder if there's some way of reassuring the public that the non-sporting events isn't just a carte blanche.
With regard to deferral, that is problematic in terms of obviously the consent that currently applies to land lapses on the 7th of November this year. So we're quite concerned that any deferral would jeopardise that date. So I understand what you're saying, though, in terms of how that's categorised, non-sporting events. Maybe whether the condition, there could be consideration for the condition for that to predominantly remain, like there could be a condition added to state that the ES Marks field remains predominantly, like in terms of the use of that site, remains predominantly in terms of the duration of the use of that space is mainly for sporting events.
A further question from one of the panel, just before I respond to that, can I just hear the... No, yeah. Awesome. I hear what you're saying about the 7th of November. I think it's something that doesn't need to go beyond that date, I wouldn't think. Just what I'm talking about and some sort of... it's really clarification that we're seeking in terms of non-sporting events at ES Marks Field. Deferral that didn't require a return to the panel would enable some discussion, potential agreement. I would think Mr. Young can correct me if I'm wrong, for the 7th of November, we've got about just under 2 weeks away.
So what has been suggested are three clarifications to the existing conditions. One, to provide some clarity around the notification of residents and an ability for residents to register their interest rather than allowing it to the trust to determine who's affected. The second one is to add to the list of Roman 4 or Roman 5, which allows the trust to provide their response to the complaints that have been registered. And the third one was really to say that ES Marks does sporting events and non-sport related events is actually covers everything. So hearing what was said was about just getting clarity around that. So if either the panel comes back to this matter after they've considered the other matters to allow the proponent to just consider those three or perhaps even more matters they may raise, you could come back to it. I prefer that the panel makes its determination with, of course, Crown's agreement to any modification. If you do defer it and delegate it to a member, it needs to be a specific person that you delegate it to. And again, they can't determine the application with conditions that might not be agreed by the Crown. But they can't refuse it, but there's nothing that compels them to approve it by the date if those matters can't be reached in agreement. So it would be preferable if this panel as a whole could obtain clarity around those three conditions.
Thank you. We have two other matters on the agenda tonight. They'll be pretty quick, I think, because I don't have any speakers. I think we have one speaker, late speaker, no speakers in relation to those matters. If you would find it helpful to have 10, 15 minutes to consider your response to the dialogue that you've heard around the table here and whether we can do something tonight or, you know, something else before the 7th of November, we'd like to hear that. So is that an agreeable path? You would like to confer and we'll reconvene your matter after we've talked, subject to one question that I have from a panel member. Thank you.
Just a question about numbers. The 20, so I searched the Act and I searched the regulation and there's no reference to days in there, so I'm just curious if you do know where that came from. And then on the ES Marks, if you can't strike out the non-sporting events, could you cap them? So say no more than 5 non-sporting events.
Yeah, I was thinking that in terms of your second question first, I believe that could be a way we could address that matter, is by putting a cap on the number of non-sporting events, and we'll confer and come back to you on that. And to your first point, yes, I withdraw my comment regarding that act. There's another act I was thinking of. It may have been within the noise management plan that applies to this site. Again, I don't have all those matters in front of me, so it's not. I don't believe that's where the reference had originated from. But like I said, following off from that point, the 20 events is a continuation of the current consent that applies to the site. So there is that continuity. Yep.
In view of that, I'll defer determination on this item until after we've determined the other items on the agenda. So I see somebody at the back of the room that wants to speak, but that's really not in our operating procedures. So I think if you've... I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Yes. Yes. please show us the presentations for the other items on the agenda.
Thank you. This application is for a development at 44 to 48 O'Day Avenue in Waterloo. The application seeks consent for the construction of the basement structure on a site for what is known as Building A under the concept approval, with a connection, tunnel connection through to Building D, and for the construction of Building D, the detailed approval for that building, which is a Part 4, Part 7 storey mixed-use building. The land is contained within the B4 mixed-use zoning. The development is permissible with consent. The application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. The application was notified in April and May of this year, and one submission was received. The submission raised general questions regarding the development of the wider site and the locality. So this is the wider site identified in red. The submission came from a resident of the property identified in blue. Just by way of background, the wider site, the site identified in red, is subject to a concept of DA approval, which grants consent for the demolition of existing buildings and remediation, excavation and preparatory and civil works on the site, and also for 5 mixed-use building envelopes known as buildings A, B, C, D and E. This application relates to basement structure of Building A and a tunnel connection through to Building D. That concept approval is subject to a planning agreement which secures the delivery of public domain, including new streets and a subdivision of the site. So this is the wider site and a detail of the concept approval and the various sites within the wider site of Buildings A and D, at the northern end of the site, which is subject to this application, and Buildings B, C and E. The other application on tonight's agenda relates to Building E. So this is the site of the application for Buildings A and D. Building A is the basement structure only, with a tunnel connection under the future street to Building D. The application seeks consent for the detailed design of Building D. Next few slides just show the existing site and the locality. So these are the existing buildings on the site to be demolished. This is a view of surrounding development currently under construction on Gadigal Avenue. This is a view looking northeast at Gadigal Avenue. So on the right-hand side of the image are buildings that have recently been constructed. On the left-hand side is the approximate location of Building D. This is looking southeast at the site, existing buildings to be demolished. Looking east at the site, the buildings to be demolished with the proposed development on the right-hand side of the image, a new building under construction on the left. So the proposal is for a Part 4, Part 7 storey mixed-use building. It contains 44 residential apartments, 6 commercial tenancies, 2 levels of basement parking and services. Also proposes the basement structure for Building A and a tunnel connection between Buildings A and D. So vehicle access to Building D is via Building A. It also includes ground floor landscaping for Building A in the event that the building on top of that car parking structure doesn't go ahead or is delayed. So this is a plan of the ground level of Building A car parking structure. So access into the basement car park is from the northern boundary of that site, from Tung Hop Street. And this is a section through the Building A car parking structure. This is north to south. And basement level 1A of Building A, that provides a connection through on the bottom of that image under the future street to Building D. Basement level 2, and this is basement level 2 of Building D, basement level 1 of Building D, so both of those levels are connected through under the street to Building A, an east-west section through Building A and Building D, ground floor of Building D shown the retail tenancies, so Building D has frontage to Archibald Avenue, Lachlan Place and Gadigal Avenue. levels 1 and 2 of Building D, that contains apartments, level 3, level 4, level 5, level 6, and then the rooftop. This is the north elevation of Building D, adjoining 13 to 17 Lachlan Street, which is currently under construction. This is the east elevation to Gadigal Avenue, and you can see 13 to 17 Lachlan Street, currently under construction. The south elevation of Building D to Archibald Avenue, west elevation to Lachlan Place. There's a photo montage of the building as viewed from Archibald Avenue. Just some additional photo montages and details of the materials, facade materials. In terms of compliance with the key development standards, the development complies with the height and floor space ratio for the site. It complies with the height and storage controls in the DCP and the setback requirements in the DCP. In terms of compliance with the ADG, there is a non-compliance with the solar access control. That control requires a minimum of 2 hours solar access to 70% of apartments. This development has a minimum of 2 hours to 57% of apartments. But the non-compliance, as I'll explain in a moment, is considered to be relatively minor as supported in this instance. Complies with cross-ventilation, deep soil, floor-to-ceiling heights, communal open space. There is a minor non-compliance with the private open space requirements for the apartments. Two of the one-bedroom apartments have 7.8 square metres of private open space. The requirement is 8 square metres, so a very minor non-compliance. The application was referred to the Design Advisory Panel in June of this year. The panel generally supported the proposal, raised a number of concerns in relation to the location of the retail amenities on the ground floor, the ground floor internal corridor design, the awning design, the relationship of the ground floor communal space with the adjoining site to the north, still under construction, and natural light to the core. Now, these issues have been addressed in the amended plans or assessed as being acceptable. So in terms of that non-compliance with the solar access requirements of the ADG, only 50% of apartments achieve a minimum of 2 hours. The standard or the requirement is 70%. However, 8 apartments receive 1 hour and 55 minutes, and that's between 9 a.m. and 10:55 a.m. So 8 apartments are just under that standard. So if they were taken into account, more than 70% would comply. So there's a minor non-compliance in relation to 8 apartments. The layout of the building is consistent with the Sydney DCP, and this site, given its context and shape, is predominantly south-facing, so there really is a difficulty in getting significantly more percentage of apartments with that minimum 2 hours, so they're not very far off. So in relation to this application, that non-compliance is supported. The application is recommended for approval with conditions. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have anybody listed to speak on this matter. So I think I'd like to flag a concern I've got in relation to the triggering of the construction of the landscaping should the remainder of the development on Block A not proceed in a timely fashion. I've got a suggestion in terms of amending condition nine. Is there any? I'll proceed to make a suggestion, or did the panel want to discuss this matter or another matter? There's a just to clarify this concern. Condition 9 says that in the event that no construction certificate has been issued for a mixed-use development on the site identified as Building A, I'm paraphrasing here, the landscaping prepared by Taylor Bremer, dated 8 October, error in the condition there? No, it says 8 October 2201, 7.8. That's clearly an error and should be 2017, I presume. Is to be completed prior to the issue of an occupation certificate for Building D. That is potentially open to abuse in terms of the issuing of a construction certificate and then the non-construction of the building. So Mr. Yarn is back. I think you had a suggestion for condition 9, that there be some additional words there to strengthen that condition.
Chair, the recommendation to strengthen the condition on 9 to alleviate your concerns would be to add after the first into the first line, in the event that no construction certificate has been issued for a mixed-use development, and, we add, and work has not commenced to erect the building on the site, and it just goes on, identified and so on. So that means that in the event, if the proponent does not get a construction certificate, before the occupation for the other building is released, they have to landscape the site. In the event that they do get a construction certificate but don't actually commence work, they have to landscape the site. But if they get a construction certificate and they commence building or erecting the building, which is the subject of the DA of that site, then they do not have to landscape the site.
Thank you. That sounds like an appropriate response to me. Does the panel have any comments about that? In relation to item 4, I will move the recommendation. Sorry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was also a suggestion from myself that two additional conditions be added, which simply deal with the eventuality of uncovering historic archaeological material or Aboriginal material on the site. The conditions are standard conditions. They don't require the applicant to do anything in addition to the other conditions, but they simply put him on notice, put the developer on notice about the requirements of the Heritage Act and the National Parks and Wildlife Act.
Conditions or advice?
Through you, Chair, in response to the panel members' concern about archaeological discovery during excavation, we could add in Schedule 1B, Condition 43, which is the archaeological discovery during excavation standard conditions, got parts A, B, C and D, and it covers indigenous objects that are unexpectedly discovered. As the panellist has indicated, it is required under the Heritage Act, but this condition just puts the developer on notice that if they discovered anything that otherwise triggers the Heritage Act, there's a condition there that is at the forefront. So I would suggest that becomes condition 43 in Schedule 1B and that the existing conditions be renumbered 44 and on.
Seems to me to be an appropriate response. Anything further at this stage? Well, I think we can proceed to... I can proceed to move the recommendation subject to the matters in condition 9 and the additional... information to do with the Heritage Act just discussed being incorporated into the conditions of consent. Are we in agreement?
To the panel,
a unanimous vote of the panel. By unanimous vote, that's the decision of the panel on item 4. Item 5 now.
Thank you. So this application relates to the proposed development of site building E on the same concept approval site. So the proposed building is an eight-storey mixed-use development. The zone is B4 mixed-use. The development is permissible with consent. The application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. The application was notified in May and June of this year. No submissions were received. Again, the same background, concept DA approval for wider site has been granted. That grants approval for demolition, land remediation and excavation works, and also approves or grants concept approval for 5 mixed-use building envelopes. So this application relates to the building envelope for Building E. So this is the site of Building E on the wider site, so it's just to the south of the previous application, immediately to the south of Building D. There's a view of the adjoining building from the Building E site. There's some development in the vicinity of the site, recent residential development under construction. There's a view looking southeast down Gadigal Avenue from the Building E site. This is directly east across Gadigal Avenue from the Building E site. So the proposals for the construction are Part 4, Part 6 and Part 8 storey mixed-use development. It includes 6 commercial tenancies, 95 residential apartments, 2 levels of basement car parking, ground floor and rooftop communal open space, and associated services and landscaping. So this is basement level 2, basement level 1, the ground floor plan, levels 1 to 3, which accommodate apartments, level 4, 5, and 6, and 7, all apartments. This is a north elevation to Archibald Avenue, so this is directly opposite to the Building D. West elevation to Reed Street and the east elevation to Gadigal Avenue. This is a south elevation, the internal western elevation, the internal eastern elevation, an east-west section through the site, and a north-south section through the site. This is some details of the external materials to be used in the construction, and this is a photo montage of the building from the corner of Archibald Avenue and Reed Street, and there's a photo montage from Archibald Avenue. So this is the facade, or the northern facade of the building, which is directly to the south of Building D, which you've just been considering. So in terms of compliance with the development standards, it complies with the height and floor space ratio controls. It complies with the height and stories controls in the DCP, and it complies with the DCP setbacks from Reed Street. There is a small non-compliance with the 4-meter upper level setback to Gadigal Avenue. The proposal has a 3-meter setback. So whilst there's non-compliance with the DCP control, it is nevertheless consistent with the approved building envelope in the concept approval. There's a similar issue in relation to solar access to apartments within the development. So the ADG requires 70% of apartments to get the minimum 2 hours. This proposed development has 56% of apartments. It complies with cross-ventilation and deep soil, building separation, apartment sizes. It also complies with floor-to-ceiling heights and communal open space. The application was considered by the Design Advisory Panel. Again, they raised some concerns regarding solar access. I'll mention that in a moment. The amenities and waste services for the retail premises, landscaping and deep soil provision, and materials and awning design. These issues have been addressed in the amended plans or through conditions of consent. In terms of solar access, 56% of apartments achieve the minimum 2 hours. However, 21 apartments receive 1 hour and 55 minutes, so just below the minimum 2 hours. So in that context, it's considered the non-compliance is relatively minor and is supported in this instance. The layout of the site is consistent with the concept DA approval. So the application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. Thank you.
I don't have anybody listed to speak on this matter, so I
open the microphone to any discussion that the panel may wish to undertake.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only recommendation is that we add that same condition as we had done for item 4 about archaeology.
Further? There being no further discussion, I move that the recommendation be adopted, subject to the additional matter raised in relation to heritage. What's the vote? Is that a unanimous vote? Unanimously recommended for approval. Approved. Reopen discussion on item 3, noting that some small amount of time has passed for the applicant to consider the dialogue previously expressed at the table. And can I ask you if you have a response?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Happy to say that I've spoken with our executive director, and he has, affirmed my authority to agree to those variations to the conditions.
Seem to enable us to come to a determination this evening. Is that correct, Mr. Yao?
Just clarify what those amendments to the conditions are for clarity. The first one is to amend condition 5 in the table of permitted events, and in the last item, ES Marks Field, to add the number 5. Per annum. That's correct. The second one is condition 14, and that is the first part of the amendment is at the end of the first sentence, so that it reads, "For major events are given prior written and or electronic communication on their website 14 days prior to the commencement date of any proposed event, with the information furnished in clause 16A. And then,
to clarify, that information in clause 16A is the information that's provided to council. Thank you.
Then to add another sentence after that amended sentence, which is this is to include email notification to residents who register their email through a portal on the CPMPT website. Now that's a little bit of programming that the Centennial Park, Moore Park Trust needs to do to enable the registration of any resident who wishes to be notified that the information has gone up on their website of another event. Yep, just an email notification. Yep. And the final amendment was to add a Roman 5 to Clause 15C, and that is the response to the complaints by the Trust. In other words, what action did they take in response to the complaint?
Thank you. So can I clarify that those measures are acceptable?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, they're acceptable.
I think we can probably proceed to determination unless there's any questions arising out of that discussion. There being none. I will move the recommendation subject to those three matters discussed in some detail by Mr. Yarn. Anybody in dissent? It's a unanimous decision. Yes. Carried. Thank you. I declare the meeting over. I'm glad that we were able to work cooperatively and achieve some positive outcomes. Thank you.